You're listening to Work in Progress. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, Editor-in-Chief of Working Nation. Work in Progress explores the rapidly changing workplace through conversations with innovators, educators, and decision-makers, people with solutions to today's workforce challenges.
My major is Computer Information Systems with a minor in cybersecurity. A lot of my classes in CIS have like a lot of girls. Like, it made me really happy how like so many more girls are towards CIS. You know, not a lot of girls want to code.
The thing that attracted me most to computer science, I can work in tech everywhere. Even like in, if you go to data science or if you go to work in something has nothing to do with computers, they will need you. I'm also trying now to try research in VR, virtual reality. So I'm trying just to explore everything and then make a decision.
So I'm really glad that I chose computer science. I'm really glad that TU is as open as they are with it, and they're actually focusing on continuously growing computer science for their degrees. Like, I think it's just about to surpass the oil and mechanical engineering.
That was Pujita Suhani, Issa Al-Rubaye, and Caitlin Colvin. I met them recently at the University of Tulsa, where they study. They all transferred in from Tulsa Community College, which we featured in the last episode. Last time on Destination Tulsa, Tech Hub in the Heartland, we met some of the youngest Tulsans who are taking their first computer classes. This week, we're focused on higher education in Tulsa and the connections to good jobs in tech. We'll explore how higher ed is preparing students for these careers and how they're helping to keep ambitious tech students and professionals in the city. You may have heard a lot about cybersecurity in the news lately. Last year, a huge hack happened right in the oil patch.
A crippling cyber attack that forced a major U.S. energy pipeline offline
the
Friday.
Colonial Pipeline slowly resuming operations after last week's cyber attack with oil
cyber
prices
cyber intruders inserted ransomware inside systems of energy giant Colonial Pipeline.
Cybersecurity is also a key part of Tulsa's reinvention as a tech hub, one that local stakeholders in education, business, and government say will help Tulsa rival Boston, Austin, and Silicon Valley.
My name is John Hale. I am the chairperson and professor in the Tandy School of Computer Science at the University of Tulsa.
Hale says because TU is a university rather than a trade school, it offers more than technical training. Students learn the fundamentals of cyber and get a holistic education in how to protect networks, so graduates can get jobs in different aspects of the field.
The rules of the game don't really change. You have an adversary, you have an asset you're trying to protect, it has some kind of value. There's a risk proposition in what you have to do. The supporting technologies are important, and you need to have personnel trained to deploy them. But they'll change from year to year. What you can really rely on are those principles, the underlying concepts. When they go to become a cybersecurity professional and they come away with that degree and that level of education, they are resilient to these changes in technology and agile, and I think a lot more valuable in a workplace. It's expanding in terms of the types and diversity of the job functions. So you have cybersecurity professionals that learn how to engineer a system, and some of that may involve secure coding. You have cybersecurity professionals that are the frontline defenders, and they may be the people that set up a firewall, set up your sort of border security, deploy controls, manage a functioning and operating network or system. Then you have the analysts, right, which go back and they look and tell you how secure and insecure your system is. Then you have the pen testers who go in and they actually try to break systems and to make them stronger, essentially, to uncover weaknesses and so forth. And so at the University of Tulsa, we cover the waterfront. Students can get any or all of those types of experiences sort of throughout their educational process.
There are hundreds of thousands of open cybersecurity jobs right now in the U.S. Over the years, the University of Tulsa has filled many of these openings, and its relationship with the Department of Defense and with the intelligence agencies have helped. But Hale says more opportunities are opening in the private sector. Some are close to home.
We had a couple of students leave here with PhDs but start companies in town. Avancic, a digital forensics company, was started by a PhD graduate, Gavin Maines, and then True Digital Security, a security services company, was started by a PhD graduate, Joel Dawkins. and they were able to bring back some talent from the coast. These were individuals that went to school here. They took jobs, maybe at a federal agency or at a, you know, at a company on either coast, and wanted to come back to Oklahoma. Gavin and Jerry were able to recruit them back. And I like to think the University of Tulsa plays a role in that we have an engine for producing high-quality graduates that are trained and educated in this particular area. And they're local, and once you visit Tulsa, I think people really like it. And I've made it home, and so our graduates, I think, have a fondness for the place. More than that, there's sort of a full stack of technology education and training opportunities, and we're starting to see that play out at the K-12 level as well. So from that to community college, Holberton School of Coding, University of Tulsa, and the other educational opportunities in town really create an opportunity and a moment in time where I think you're going to see that you've got the raw materials for a workforce to build and keep something here.
The University of Tulsa has been doing cybersecurity research and education longer than many schools, for almost 30 years. In 2000, the federal government designated the University of Tulsa to be a center of academic excellence, one of the first institutions to be recognized. The university was also an early adopter of Scholarship for Service. That's a talent recruitment program in which people get specialized cybersecurity training at select universities and then go work for the federal government. The university calls its version the Cyber Corps program, and it's led to a pipeline of talent to cybersecurity jobs in the NSA and CIA. It's graduated more than 300 to work in those agencies. Tyler Moore got his undergraduate degree at TU in 2004, and after completing his PhD at Cambridge, he came back a decade later. Now he's chair of the School of Cyber Studies at the university.
So on the educational side, we have recently reorganized academically how we deliver our cybersecurity program. Historically, everything was housed inside our computer science department. But within the past year, the university has created what in some ways is one of the first of its kind, really, which is a new interdisciplinary department called the School of Cyber Studies. And I'm the chair of that department. So I'm a computer scientist, but inside this department, we've got computer scientists and engineers, but we've also got psychologists, business school researchers, social scientists. This is a little bit different because normally you organize your university around a discipline, but cybersecurity touches so many different disciplines that we've brought them together to offer degrees that are much more relevant. And so we have a new Bachelor of Science in Cybersecurity and a new PhD program in Cyber Studies too. And they're housed inside this interdisciplinary school. The idea here is to scale up considerably the number of graduates that we would be producing. And we're doing this in part by attracting, I think, a broader set of students who would otherwise consider cybersecurity. The other piece has to do with the research and innovation side. We have faculty who are sort of at the top of their game, who are conducting research that is answering questions at the frontier of knowledge, right? And so some of that knowledge is going to contribute to, you know, scientific advances, but there's a process by which those scientific advances today can lead to companies tomorrow. And so that's something that we are working to harness much more than we've done in the past. And there's some where we are creating something called the Cyber Innovation Institute, which is bringing together both this traditional R&D, which universities do, but also seeking out ways to commercialize research activity in a more intentional way. Every industry, every company has a cybersecurity problem. They need cybersecurity expertise. And that expertise that's needed is on the defensive side. So what we have done in recent years is really develop new educational and research programs focused on cyber defense primarily. That's where we see a lot of the growth, and that's in terms of employer demand, and that's what we're trying to meet.
Because of that need for cyber defense in every industry, there's a growing pool of venture capital for cyber startups, and some of that capital is local. One way the university is trying to boost venture capital interest is through its ties to the Tulsa Innovation Labs. We explored that in our first episode. Another way is the TU Team 8 Cyber Fellows Program.
This is a fairly unique, completely unique actually, PhD program where students come and work on research projects. And that's pretty normal. But what's different here is we have a partnership with this company called Team 8. Team 8 is an Israeli startup foundry is what they call themselves, but they have had connections to historically the sort of Israeli counterparts to the NSA, and they created lots of cybersecurity companies. And so we're working with them and with their heads of research at that organization to identify research projects that our faculty could complete that have high commercialization potential. We then recruit PhD students to come to Tulsa to train, to carry out that research. And then potentially some of those PhD students will produce research that could be commercialized. And so it's still early days. We're in the second year of that program. It takes 4 years to get a PhD. But our hope is that some of these students who come through the Cyber Fellows program will do research that can be more rapidly commercialized. And our hope is that that commercialization can take place in Tulsa.
Moore says more graduates in cybersecurity and other tech fields should be able to start their careers or start a business close to home.
As a university, we can contribute an increased supply of a highly educated workforce, but we also can serve as a source of ideas and innovation that could eventually lead to the kinds of companies that would solve the problems that need solved today, right? But you also need, if you're going to develop industry here, you need to have financial backing to where there's people who are willing to invest in companies. And I think we're seeing more of that now. More than that, what you really need is a place where people want to live. Tulsa has some advantages that we haven't maybe always done a great job of talking about, but I think we're getting better at talking about now.
The University of Tulsa has what you might call a feeder school, literally across the street, Will Rogers College High School. TU created a two-year curriculum for Rogers. The first year is the basics of computer science. The second year introduces cybersecurity. It's the first year for the curriculum, and 60 high school students are enrolled. If they end up at the University of Tulsa, they'll be starting with 6 hours of college credit. They'll also have an opportunity for mentorship and job shadowing to inspire them to consider cyber as a career. Timothy Crisp teaches cybersecurity and computer science at Will Rogers. He says the cyber program will give students a head start in college.
Especially funneling into the University of Tulsa, you're taking their undergraduate level course in high school and you're following the same requirements, you're taking the same midterms, you're learning the same lessons. There's no way to not have a leg up because you are now more familiar with that information. We have 80 kids, roughly about 80 kids in the class right now in the computer science principles, and 22 of those kids went over to the University of Tulsa to hear about the degree programs and the things that are offered in the computer science and the electrical engineering college, but in the computer science department. Going through that, there's no way to not have a leg up, especially if that happens. And the goal here is that our students can actually take fundamentals of technology in eighth grade for high school credit. So they could start their freshman year with computer science principles. Their sophomore year, they can take the cybersecurity basics. And then next year, we'll add another class. And what that is yet, we don't know. But the goal is to get them step by step to where eventually they can easily trickle into the University of Tulsa to get a degree in computer science or cybersecurity, to really build that stronghouse of people here in Tulsa who are educated in the technology sphere, in cybersecurity, in computer science, so that we can become this tech hub.
Crisp started as an English teacher. He transitioned to cyber because of the growing need. And he's been getting a crash course in the field at the University of Tulsa to help him prepare to expand the high school program. Will Rogers program, he said, is going to have more diversity than most STEM classes. Crisp started as an English teacher. He transitioned to cyber because of the growing need. And he's been getting a crash course in the field at the University of Tulsa to help him prepare to expand the high school program. Will Rogers' program, he said, is going to have more diversity than most STEM classes.
More diversity in the program is something that I really want to focus on while we are focusing on building out the students who are going to take that. So focusing on getting more women in STEM and women in coding in a field that predominantly has been largely overrun by the male population. I really have a focus of like encouraging that diversity of letting every student know and building that opportunity of you can do this. Yes, it may be tough, but everyone can do this, no matter your skill set or your skill level or how smart you think you are or how much you attain it. And then also really trying to build that understanding, like this is important for you in the future, because we don't know truly how much the future is going to hold in jobs that don't require technology now that will require you to know it, and specifically coding and the security of those devices as we move in the future. I actually have a list of students on right here who are really interested in signing up for the cybersecurity basics class next year. I have more females on that list than I do males currently.
Michael Kelly is a junior at Will Rogers High. He's taking basics of computer science, but he wants to go on to take the new cyber course.
I just think the world's becoming very digital right now. And I think with so much digital, there's so much information and important information that people and companies hold online. And cybersecurity is just the thing that I can go in and test someone or a company's security and make sure it's like, it's right, it's up to date, it's up like and running, that it's going to protect people and companies' information. I think that's just like one passion on why I want to kind of go into cybersecurity, maybe even major in it.
Another tech area that Tulsa is focusing on is advanced aerial mobility, commonly called drones. To learn more, we'll have to go up the road from Tulsa about an hour to Oklahoma State University in Stillwater. Over the past 15 years, OSU has grown to be a leader in drone technology, partly thanks to Professor Jamie Jacob. He's the director of the Unmanned Systems Research Institute at OSU, and he joined the faculty in 2006.
At that time, drones were still a pretty new thing. And you know, where I was at the time, I went with him a proposal and said, hey, you know, what we really need is a drone test facility that would be connected to a university that would allow us to be able to, you know, do research in this area, work with companies and government agencies to develop this technology. And Oklahoma State University was really receptive to that idea. Like, yeah, we see this is going to be an important piece of, you know, the new aerospace market. But we also, you know, the state of Oklahoma has a really rich history and tradition in emerging aviation. And so it tied really well into those kind of that vision. But also there was another professor here, Andy Arena, who developed a great capability for what's called design, build, fly, where you have students think of an aircraft design, you go out and build it and you flight test it. And that was pretty unique at the time because, you know, most people were still teaching and training students to build aircraft on paper. Here's an aircraft mission, go out, you know, do the engineering and write a 100-page report on it. And so this was still a pretty unique concept that, you know, a lot of universities weren't implementing. And so they had built up a really fantastic capability to design, build, and flight test aircraft. And that meshed really well with this kind of vision to have a flight test capability. And so it's really grown from there. And so we were in the right place at the right time to be able to work, you know, with all these companies and federal agencies that were, you know, developing this technology as it rolled out over the next, you know, 15 years.
The university recently benefited from a $6 million grant from the National Science Foundation to develop UAS, or unmanned aircraft systems, for scientific application. A UAS can gather weather data, much more data than weather balloons collect.
And the idea is, hey, we get most of our data that we do our weather forecasting in from weather balloons, the tried and true approach that, you know, is now basically a 100-year-old process where we launch a weather balloon, it goes up, it gets the data that goes into the weather forecast. And that data is, you know, extremely critical. It's a very valuable and necessary for this process, but also it's very sparse. You know, and use the state of Oklahoma as an example where, well, where's our weather balloon launch happening from? It's at the National Weather Center, who are one of our partners on this project in Norman, Oklahoma. And that's it. You know, that's your data point that you're getting for the entire state. And of course, we know that there's a great variability between what happens in one part of the state and what happens in another part of the state. And so drones are a great tool for this, you know, using these UAS to be able to fly them in the atmosphere and control them rather than launching a weather balloon and never getting your sensor back, right? So you basically, you launch a weather balloon, it goes away and it's gone forever. But now we have this tool, which is, you know, reusable. So it saves money, it's better for the environment, but it also gives you better data.
Part of that project was figuring out how meteorologists and atmospheric scientists can use this technology as part of their regular scientific observations to help improve weather forecasting.
Yeah, eventually, we'll be able to essentially fly these things out from the shore or from ships to be able to investigate hurricanes. And as you're getting this information in, what that does, it helps you improve your hurricane forecast prediction. Same thing with winter storms. You know, we actually have this huge winter storm that moved in through Oklahoma today with both freezing rain and sleet. We were actually out flying this morning to get data. It's not just getting data about the weather. So we're sending these drones up and say, well, what kind of sensor information are we getting off this? It helps us improve our forecast, but also how well do these systems work in really extreme conditions where, you know, it might be 20 degrees below freezing and it's precipitation in the form of snow, sleet, or hail, as, you know, as well as high winds. And so all these things, you know, factor into, you know, can your systems operate in these really extreme environments? And the last piece of kind of the weather that I like to mention is fires. And, you know, this has become a much larger problem, not just within Oklahoma in terms of brush fires and grassland fires, but also, you know, out in the West with forest fires. So, you know, in this case, you know, these are coupled with, you know, both climate and the weather simultaneously. And we're going to see, you know, these forest fires become more severe over the coming years. And having these systems be able to provide those first responders and those firefighters with that real-time situational awareness, where the fire is at, where it's growing, but also taking this information in and feeding that back into fire prediction models to tell you where the fire is going to be, you know, in the next hour, 6 hours a day. Boeing is currently sponsoring our high school internship program, particularly aimed at underrepresented minority students. We have a large Native American population here that we serve at Oklahoma State University. And, you know, we take that, you know, as part of our land grant mission, you know, to be able to serve all communities within the state. And so we've been working with various tribes across the state, including the Choctaw Nation, Osage Nation, and Cherokee Nation, who all have separate drone programs as well. So that really meshes well in terms of being able to take these students in, give them experiences, not just in the summer, but also throughout the year in a meaningful internship program.
What kind of jobs can you get in this field? Graduates can work on design of the aircraft and integration of the systems and the sensors, or they can work with the end user to help their problem, whether it's getting faster or more accurate weather data, longer-term climate data to prevent brush fires and forest fires, or data on sensitive flora and fauna.
We've been working with the Oklahoma Department of Commerce at the state level, you know, to be able to bring other companies in that utilize the resources that we've already developed here in-house to be able to grow their company and develop the products that they have, as well as working with folks like the Tulsa Innovation Laboratory within Tulsa to be able to, you know, really focus on a certain region and develop those activities that will provide new opportunities for budding entrepreneurs. I kind of relate this very similar to what we've seen in the app development space for phones. I mean, 10 years ago, you know, as we were developing smartphones, nobody had the idea that you'd be able to develop all these unique apps for phones and you could actually make a living, you know, writing code for apps that we use now on a daily basis. And we're going to see something very similar in the drone industry, you know, within the next few years.
And with the help of startup funding and coordination with organizations like the Tulsa Innovation Labs, many jobs in this new industry may be in Oklahoma.
I want to see how Tulsa evolves in the coming years and how there's like so much more like room for opportunity. So I would like to stay for a while.
What I like about the city, it's not crowded. I can go from anywhere in the city in 10 minutes. If you get a business, you have a job, you will like Tulsa.
I kind of always viewed it as like the oil town. So I didn't really think that we would eventually come to this place of technology's gonna take over and we're gonna rebrand ourselves. I think it'll definitely get Tulsa's name a lot bigger than what it is now.
You've been listening to the third episode in this special series for the Work in Progress podcast, Destination Tulsa, Tech Hub in the Heartland. In the next two episodes, we'll talk to Tulsa entrepreneurs and some people helping companies in virtual health and other tech fields to get their start. We'll also explore a tech incubator that's connecting academia and business, and talk with an entrepreneur who's accelerating diversity in Tulsa's business community. Destination Tulsa was written and produced by Larry Buell. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, editor-in-chief of Working Nation and host of the Work in Progress podcast.